Welcome, Lund loyalists, YouTubers watching on John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective, those watching on X and Instagram and listening on Apple and Spotify. It's John Lund Unleashed and johnlundunleashed.com. Brought to you by Riopel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. Right now featuring amazing stem cell technology. For all your pain and for the guys, check out the latest in low T and testosterone therapy to make you feel like yourself again. Riopel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center at riopelcosmetic.com. Now, all juiced up and ready to go. Here's Johnny.
Yes, I am juiced up and ready to go. Going down to the ball game today as the Giants try to get one, avoid being swept. And you see right there, new threads, old bats. And I told you about the new threads yesterday, what I thought of. I thought they could have went to some sort of like a, minor league person, smoked a fatty, got the vibe of the city. You don't need orange and black and everything. The Padres have the green and the pink and the yellow, and it has nothing to do with their yellow and brown colors, which who the hell came up with that anyway? You know what we're doing for a team? Yellow and brown. I mean, fecal matter and urination? Yes, that is my favorite color. The University of Wyoming Cowboys do that as well. And I'm like, brown and yellow? Like, who came up with that? Somebody very high up, like I said, because normally somebody's going to go, that's the dumbest idea ever, except for someone that has power. And then they go, oh my God, that's the best idea ever, boss. How did you ever come up with it? Anyway, I like orange and black. It's not that. It's just the colors of the 60s and the vibe and everything. I the idea was tremendous. The execution, gotta have orange and black in there. Anyway, good morning. We do not want to be off on a negative foot. We'll be a little bit shorter than normal today just because I'm heading down to the ballpark. I got to be in the dugout, Giants dugout, by 10:30 Pacific time. So I want to make sure I talked to Bob Melvin beforehand. And then we got the game itself, and I'll be doing what I did last time. I'll go into the clubhouse. I'll try to get a vibe of the game itself so they try to get one against the Rebs. It is episode 109. Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time, making the time, and telling all your friends about John Lund Unleashed. We are live on YouTube right now. Come and join the community if you're watching in one of the other places. And you can watch on X. You can watch on Instagram. There are all sorts of different places. You can even go to my Facebook page. You can do anything however you want to do it, whatever's easiest. After the show, we hit a button, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. But we'd love to have you in on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Please join up, get those alerts on, and you will never miss anything. We had a few new things that we put up yesterday after the show, so make sure that you are in the know as far as that goes. John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Bay Area Sports Collective, in which, by the way, in fact, I think Pauly sent this out today, Pauly Mack, because I think they're at 11 and Tommy's at 2 or 12, or I should know this a lot better than I do, but hang on just one second, because I know that Pauly sent this out. But anyway, live shows all day long on Bay Area Sports Collective, so make sure that you are right there and you are subscribed. All right, here's what we got going on today. The playoff piece I wrote yesterday still holds, even if, let me see this, Lund going live. Even if Mike Malone got fired, how crazy is that? First Taylor Jenkins, and now Mike Malone gets fired. I mean, what the heck is going on? The Warriors crush the Suns. Is Pods the key to everything, the way that he is playing right now? Because we talk about people that are in the bank, and then people that you go, what if? Steph's in the bank. Jimmy's in the bank. Draymond's in the bank. Come playoff time. Can we put Pods in the bank the way that he's playing? We got to get into that, because if he's playing this way, then that's a good thing for the Warriors, and it might be a bad thing for the rest of the Western Conference. The T-Wolves were up big on Milwaukee last night, and then they choked that thing away. And so now Minnesota drops a little bit. And I did have them dropping that game, by the way, when I did my expert analysis, and I still think I have that. I should go back and look at it. It was last week when I tried to predict like the final five games. Even the final five games I can't predict. Mike Malone was fired. We'll get into that. I don't know what's going on in Denver. Does that change things as far as maybe the Warriors seeing them and my fear of the Nuggets? We'll get into that too. Standings, the bats very quiet again. Hunter Green was really, really good, and Hunter Green's one of the better pitchers in the league. He's throwing upwards of 100 miles per hour every night. And Nick Lodolo's a guy who's been a prospect for the Reds for a long time, but it's like, come on, man. We're going to go back to these bats. So we've gone from the euphoria of the 8-1 start to losing two straight to the Reds. I'm not panicked or anything like that, but they do need to get the bats going today. Plus, the Justin Verlander start is very important, so we'll get into that. Love to get your thoughts on City Connects. I mean, we talked about them yesterday. I showed you the pictures, all those kind of things, but you saw them in action last night. The one thing is, unlike the old City Connects, and they showed some of those in the crowd last night, and they're like, those are really ugly. The old City Connects, I just did not like them. But they didn't win last night. And so the City Connects, people bought the City Connects because they won so much in those City Connects, and now they're 0-1. Does everyone want to trash those? Now that you saw them in action last night, it kind of gave me a Halloweenish vibe, because Halloween, purple is a color in Halloween, orange and black is a color in Halloween. So as I'm watching those things, and they're going for the vibe of the city and the vibrance, and I think like the 60s and wavy and all that kind of stuff. And I was watching that thing going, it's Halloween. Like, orange and black is Halloween, but you added purple, and that's really Halloween. So like, those are the three colors of Halloween, and you added another one. And my whole thing was, look, I get it. And I don't, you know, they're not always marketing to me. And I saw a bunch of kids wearing those, and that's totally cool. But if you would have went just all out, you know, the colors of the 60s, like yellows and, you know, pinks and yellows and blues, and just like, and gone total vibe on this thing and really, you know, just gone all out on it. They could, it's such a great concept to get the vibe of San Francisco in the 60s and the music scene and all that kind of stuff. It would have been so cool, but somebody in there threw a monkey wrench in the whole thing and went, we got to have orange and black. It's just, there's got to still be orange and black. Like, we are the Giants. We are orange and black. It's still got to be that. And I liked what the Padres did when they just went totally off board, and they're just like, we don't need yellow and brown and everything. Let's just make a really cool alternative uniform. And they went like almost like a neon green and a pink and a yellow. And it was like, I don't know what you think of those things, but I was like, I thought that was cool. By the way, I saw some of those I was watching a little bit of the A's last night with the Padres up there. A's did a nice job against the Padres, but busy night last night. Very cool. The Warriors blow out the Sun, so we'll get into that as well. But the bats quiet, City Connect uniforms, Justin Verlander, big, big start today. A couple of draft needs that my friends at SF Niners Data did, and they do a really nice job, and they threw together basically the composite of what everybody has as far as the way they've ranked offensive and defensive linemen. And since the 49ers have a major, major need there, I want to pop those up on the screen and just tell you a few guys that I like. Today's the 9th. We're 15 days, 2 weeks from tomorrow, from the NFL draft. So I'm pretty excited about that. Real quick, I have to drink this coffee because I don't have my normal coffee cup that keeps it hot throughout the whole thing. So by like in 10 minutes, this will be ice cold. So I don't mean to offend, but I've got to drink some coffee. So anyway, and random things that happen all throughout the show. And we will go a little bit shorter today, and I apologize for that. But I told you, I'm going to try something today in which I solicit a couple of the restaurants around the park, because you legally can't do the show from the park, the live shows. But I can, you know, just go, hey, man, can you just give me an internet connection? And I'm hoping after the game. So what I'm going to do is go to the game, run downstairs, get some interviews like I did on Friday. And Verlander happens to be pitching again. And then what I'll do after that is I'm going to try to run across the street. So like a half hour, maybe after the game, we'll talk to players and Bob Melvin and everything. So stay tuned for that. I'll put that up on YouTube, also on X, all of my Instagram, all my places that I put stuff up. So I'll make sure to post all those things from the clubhouse for you. But then afterwards, I'm going to try to run across the street and do like a, I don't know, 30-minute post game. So keep those alerts on today on John Lund Unleashed, because I'm going to try to do something from one of those places around the ballpark. And I'm sure that somebody will just give me an internet connection and a table and a bar stool. That's all I need. I'm all set. So anyway, we'll see what we can do as far as that is concerned. So that's what's going on today. Roll call time, everybody. I hope everybody is doing great today. Rockin' New Era says, hey-o! That's a good way to start a thing. Hello, Dom. I don't know if you're going to be at the game. Ernesto Ron, it is wonderful to see you. Pin Willie is becoming a regular, by the way. I totally dig it. Neil DiNardo. I always have to watch it. DiNardi. Sorry, DiNardi. I want to make sure that I'm right on things, because people always put stuff up and then you have to, then you read it, which I really don't care. I'll just read whatever. You know, I'm like Ron Burgundy. Hi, Taylor. It is great to see you. It is great to see everything expanding. By the way, it is Masters Week, and that's Pine Needle right there. And taking the, absolutely taking the Masters. Did you, by the way, when you were in Reno, you hit some bets on the Masters? Hello, Danny. It is good morning to see. It is great to see you, my friend. Sorry, I just put in eye drops. I'm just like, what are you kidding me? That was a dumb thing. Hi, Jesus. Hi, Jake. Good to see everybody. Joy is here, so we are complete. Frank, good morning to you. Did I say hi to Mark? Kenny, good morning to you, my friend. Christian, good morning, good morning, good morning. Jake, hello, hello, hello. What do we got? Papa J. It is always great to see Papa J, and he's always hitting us up. Like, subscribe, both channels, right. John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective, please. And get those alerts on, because like I said, I'm going to be going live later near the ballpark. Good to see you, Aaron. Good to see you, Kenneth. If I missed you, I will hit you up. Hi, Jazz fan. Good to see you. I will hit you up during the show at some point. But anyway, questions, comments, thoughts, you can always hit me up with supers if you want. Absolutely, to get your stuff on the board. So good morning to everybody on a Wednesday. And like I said, we'll do a high quality show today. It'll just be a little bit quicker than it normally is because I got to get to the dugout by 10:30. And from my door to that dugout is an hour 20 to an hour 30. So I'm going to have to hustle today, but we'll be fine. We got plenty of time to do stuff. All right. The playoff piece, I just wanted to remind you of this, and it doesn't change. Some people hit me up on this and it's like, well, does this change with the firing of Mike Malone? And I don't think it does. Right here. Here is the fact. Let me go back to the top of it. Who do the Warriors want to play and avoid come playoff time? There's a video that accompanies it. If you would watch that, that would be tremendous. But as I did it, and this has been out today, so no spoilers if you haven't seen it. And I won't give you the details on it, so you can go to John Lund Unleashed on the blog page. But the Kings I put, this is easiest to hardest. Kings, obvious to me, they're having troubles, and they need to reset some things. Some guys want to know the direction of the team, and they're kind of at a crossroads after moving De'Aaron Fox. So the Kings would be easiest. Although what I'll say about these, about the Kings and the Mavericks both here, I'm going easiest to hardest here. What I'll say about both the Kings and the Mavericks is if you play those teams, that means you're in the play-in and it's not a seven-game series. So the Kings in a seven-game series, you're better. You're going to beat them. Mavericks in a seven-game series, it might go four. You know, you're probably going to sweep them. But the problem is let's say if you're in the 7-8 and the Mavs are in the 9-10 and the Mavs beat the Kings, then you play Anthony Davis with your season on the line. And I just don't love that. So that's why I kind of put it like that, because those teams, while they're going to be the easiest, an asterisk goes by them because you're not going to play them in a full series. You're going to play them in one game potentially. And that could be a knockout game. And while I think the Warriors would win said knockout game, we've seen in the NCAA tournament, the 16 has beaten a one. And it's not that drastic, obviously, the Kings, the Mavericks game, but it's just you'd be playing for your season and not a seven-game series. So keep that in mind when we think of those teams. Grizzlies, I'll give them credit. They are still playing better. And the Timberwolves last night, big loss. So as I put the Timberwolves right there, it says they've been a forgotten team this season. And they had won 14 of 17. I'm going to reset this really quick. They had won 14 of 17 going into that game, had the Timberwolves. And so that's why I moved them. So I put the Timberwolves right there. Clippers after that. Rockets, Lakers, Nuggets. Now here, as I put right here on the Nuggets, breaking news, they fired him. You know, I don't know about you. I don't think Mike Malone, to me, in a matchup against the Warriors, makes that big of a difference. Now, is he a great coach? Yeah. Am I confused that they fired him? Yes. I don't know what's going on in Denver. I don't cover them on a regular basis. There had to be some sort of falling out with the players. And when you have a fire and brimstone red ass kind of a head coach, thinking like Jim Harbaugh, somebody like that, they just burn out fast, you know? And so a lot of people are like, what happened? What happened? What happened? Well, when you have a red ass kind of a coach, and I've told you this before, they've heard every speech, they've heard every fire and brimstone and all that kind of stuff, then these kind of things happen. So we'll get into that more in a second. And then I put the Thunder at the end as the toughest team. I guess I'm doing that based on 64 and 14, but the thing is, and you again, go back, go to johnlundunleashed.com, and there it is. Who do the Warriors want to play and avoid come playoff time? So you can check out the piece. But, you know, I really, as much as, you know, because like I said, I'm not the gigantic list guy, but as much as I struggle with lists, which isn't very often because I don't really care about Mount Rushmores and lists and all those kind of things, you know that. But, I look at the West and I know that it's tough. But I think even with Denver firing Mike Malone, I just, from a matchup standpoint, do I think they're going to win the championship? No. But from a matchup standpoint, it's still tough. And if they have home court advantage and they have easy games the rest of the way, and I think they're going to be fine. And they lost a few in a row. Maybe Mike Malone was clashing with some players. The only player that he really could be clashing with to get him fired at this point, to me, is Jokic. And Jokic had to green light this thing because you just don't do that. Your best player, it's like Steph Curry, hey, we're going to fire the coach and not tell him and blindside him. I don't know what Jokic is going to say or has said about it, but I can't believe that he wasn't in on it. He'd just have to be. He's just such a great player. It's like, look, you have a problem with us letting Mike Malone go? So, like I said, fire and brimstone, red-ass coaches, they burn out quickly, and that's probably what happened with the Nuggets. He had yelled at them so many times or told them so many things or so many speeches or the same thing. You know how your boss, kind of after a while, you tune him out like Charlie Brown's teacher? Wah, 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 wah. Like, dude, I've heard it all. I've heard your fiery speech. I've heard your pissed off speech. I've heard your nice guy speech. I've heard everyone you got. And Mike Malone seems like, to me, as great of a coach he is, as he might only have one speech, which is like, get it going, you know, red ass one speech guy. And so if it's that tone all the time, it can burn players out. And so I'm just purely speculating, but it seems pretty obvious to me because I've seen it in covering teams before that after a while, it's like, okay, we've heard it all and we need a new voice. So for them to do this with just a few games left in the season is shocking, just like it was in Memphis. Although in Memphis' situation, I don't know, that team just seems a bit off and out of control. And with a guy like John Morant trying to be this Steph Curry of their team, the leader of their team, I don't even mean on the court. I just mean a guy who tries to keep that team together. I just don't see leadership in Memphis. So I could see why that happened. Mike Malone, I'm purely speculating that when you're Brimstone and Redass, they've heard all the speeches. So it doesn't, bottom line to the whole thing is, as far as the Warriors, just purely the Warriors matchup, it doesn't change a lot to me. Because if they have home court, it's tough to win there, although they were 25-15 at home. They still have Jokic, last time I checked. The litmus test for those guys is Michael Porter Jr. on? Is Aaron Gordon playing a great game like he did when they were missing Jokic and Murray? And what is Murray going to be? Because he didn't play in the last game either for the Warriors. And that was the only one, for the Nuggets, and that's the only one the Warriors won. So it doesn't change anything for me as far as the Nuggets are concerned. I just think it's weird, but I'm not near the Denver Nuggets. In fact, here's Steve Kerr, who knows Mike Malone well, and we all do because he used to be a Warriors assistant. But here's Steve Kerr talking about Mike Malone's firing.
Shocked, like everyone. Mike has obviously been a great, great coach, championship coach, and fantastic record. And again, like with Taylor, you don't expect anything like this this late in the season. And then, as I said with Taylor, organizations have to do their own business, and we aren't privy to any of that. So I have no idea what was happening. So I can't really comment on anything other than, you know, wishing Mike well, because he's done an amazing job, and doesn't seem right, but this is the business we're in, and it's, you know, we're all going to suffer a similar.
It's interesting because when Steve said that at the end, and I cut it off at the end, so I apologize there, but he said, we're all going to suffer a similar, and he said a similar fate, which is, it's funny thinking about Steve, not funny, but it's interesting thinking about Steve Kerr in that context, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, Steve Kerr's not getting fired. Now, I said this yesterday about the Suns, and we saw what a dumpster fire they are, and Steph and Kevin Durant, who's out, embraced after the game. Other than Booker, they just don't have anybody left on their roster. But like I said, they were this close, Bradley Beal saying, okay, I'll go to Miami, to getting Jimmy Butler before the Warriors did. And I think the Warriors would be maybe not in such a dire place of what the Phoenix Suns are, because they built a flawed big three, and then you take Durant out there and they don't have any depth, and they're just, you know, they're going to have to trade Durant in the offseason. I've said this before. I think that they would have had to trade Curry, and I think you would have been looking at a similar situation playing around 9-10. So they'd have been round down with the Kings, the Mavericks, the Suns. They were 25-26 when they made the Jimmy trade, and now you see what a difference it is having what they have. Now, it wouldn't be a show unless we, of course, did the standings. So let's take a quick look. I'm sorry, I popped on the wrong window there. Let's look at the standings, of course, because we're getting close here. And this is interesting because the Minnesota Timberwolves last night, I can't believe they did this, but they blew it. And let me get to, here we go, standings. So last night, so Minnesota loses to drop down to 8. They're 46-33. Everybody else stays the same. So the Nuggets, to me, they have an easier road the rest of the way. I think they're going to end up 50-32. I think the Warriors are going to end up 50-32 as well. Remember, Portland, San Antonio, and they get the Clippers. And if things sit right now like that, so both teams win their final, you know, their two before they match up. So the Clippers and the Warriors go in at 49-32 in that final game on the 13th. Every game starts at 12:30 on that Sunday. They beat the Clippers. They're ahead of the Clippers. Clippers have the season series. So they're conceivably right now, they're one game back, but you go into that final game, you beat the Clippers, you would be 50-32. They'd be 49-33. So that would be absolutely huge. And you could get as high as the four seed. But like I said, I think Denver's going to win out. I think Denver's going to be 50-32. If that's the case, that both the Warriors and the Nuggets are 50-32, Nuggets get the tiebreaker, obviously. So they'd be the four, Warriors would be the five, and then the Clippers would drop down and they would play the Lakers in the six. So it's starting to crystallize a little bit. I don't expect the Warriors to lose, but you never know, with two of the three games being San Antonio and Portland. Those should be automatic wins. San Antonio's packed it in. Portland's playing harder, but obviously they're out of the playoffs, so we'll see what it is at that point. But they should be 50-32. So I think the Nuggets are going to be in 50-32. The Lakers, you could conceivably catch them. Now you're only one back, but remember, you lose that tiebreaker. So with three games left in the season, they are two games back of the Lakers, so it's highly unlikely they get that. So there you go. What do you think? Who would you not want to play? I just want to keep – I want to stay out of the play-in. I just think even though the Grizzlies don't scare me at all, the Mavericks don't scare me, the Kings don't scare me, but in a one-game playoff, you just don't know. And the Timberwolves drop in there, and that was a huge loss last night, and I'll talk about that in just a second. So there you go. That's what it looks like as far as the bracket is concerned, that we have to flash up every day, and I'll be very excited when we won't have to do that anymore. That will be very, very nice. But very nice, very nice. But Timberwolves last night, look at this deal. So they trailed by 24 with less than 10 minutes left. They got beat by the Bucks, a 34-3 run. They're up 95-71 with 9:59 left in the fourth. I didn't even check in on this game because I saw that. I'm like, well, the Timberwolves going to win that game. And we would have had a bunch of teams again tied at 47-32. They're now 47-33, 34-3 run. So if Minnesota doesn't stay out of the play-in game, that's why. Absolutely crazy. So there's that. There's Myers being fired. You just heard from Steve Kerr on that one. To me, you know, I'm watching this game last night, and this is Danny Emmerman, who's now with the SF Standard, and we've had Danny on the show before when he was with the Bay Area News Group. Worked with us over at KNBR. Really, really talented young guy. And he does the beat for the Warriors for the Kawakami place, and David Lombardi's there, and John Shea is there, and now Danny Emmerman is there. Super talented guy. In fact, I saw Tim at opening day. I'm like, great hire on Danny Emmerman. Great guy. So anyway, since he returned from a minor back injury March 18th, Brandon Podziemski has made the most three-pointers in the NBA, 42. There's the list. Pods, Doncic, Reeves and Beasley, Derek White, Jordan Poole, Steph Curry, Trae Young at 36. The most in the league. So to me, let me just flash this up one more time. Let me flash the box from last night. To me, I know what Jimmy Butler is going to do, generally. I know what Steph Curry is going to do, generally. I know what Draymond Green, and I'm talking about the playoffs. I generally know what these guys are going to do, and that's called in the bank. You and I have talked about it a bunch of times. But if Brandon Podziemski is the guy that we've seen lately, 7-12 last night. I keep saying this every time we reconvene. Well, he's not going to shoot like that from three. Well, he's not going to shoot like that from three. Well, he's not going to shoot like that from three. He set a record in three-pointers made in twice in a week, did Podziemski. So I don't expect him in the playoffs to go 7-12, 4-6 for 22 points, but he's learning how to play off Steph really, really well. He understands what the defense is going to do and how they're going to tilt, and he just takes a ton of advantage of it, and he gets a lot of open shots because, number one, Draymond Green's getting you the ball in the right place, so he's running the offense a lot of times. But when you look at what they have on the floor, they're going to tilt themselves towards Steph Curry. They're going to tilt themselves towards Jimmy Butler, and those guys space the floor well enough. And then you got Draymond Green working in the whole thing. And so Moses Moody and Podziemski are going to get open shots. All they have to do is move. Just keep moving, keep moving, keep moving, and you're going to get open shots. So if you watch Moody, especially the corner three, he gets a lot wide open. But Podziemski gets a lot of open shots. And so now he's knocking down those shots, and they're not going to adjust. Defensively in the playoffs, you can't adjust off Curry. There's got to be a way, and this happens in sports all the time, where you dictate how you're going to get beat. It's a term used in sports all the time. If I'm going to get beat, I'm going to dictate how I'm going to get beat. Well, teams playing the Warriors in the playoffs are going to say, we're not letting Curry beat us, and we're not letting Jimmy Butler beat us. So who else is going to beat us? Well, guys like Moody and Podziemski, if they can consistently hit shots like they're doing right now, and especially Podziemski, he might be the key to the whole thing. And I thought maybe it was going to be Kuminga, and it still might be. You know, Kuminga coming off the bench and the type of things, and you're going to shorten up your bench and all those kind of things. You're going to heat check Buddy Hield. Kevon Looney is going to be playing against some teams, not against others, depending on matchups. Santos, you're not going to see with as many minutes. And then, you know, you saw the guys last night because there was a lot of garbage time last night, Trayce Jackson-Davis. He played 19 minutes, kind of a forgotten guy. He may play because of certain matchups in the playoffs, especially if they play against size. So, you know, the bench will be shortened, and there's going to be certain guys that will be used in some series and just not used in other series. But as I look at this whole thing, I'm taking Curry for granted here, and I'm taking Jimmy for granted here, I understand that. But I know what those guys are going to do. I know what Draymond's going to do. Moody and Podziemski, to me, what are they going to do? And Kuminga, to a certain extent. But if this is the Podziemski they see in the playoffs, the Warriors, and other teams seeing the playoffs, this can be a team that can get to the NBA Finals. Now, I don't know if they can beat the Celtics. I don't know if they can beat Cleveland. But as I put that list together, as I said, and we can take this off the screen now, you get it. You know what Podziemski's been doing lately. But as I put together that list of teams in order of being not afraid of them, but just it's a matchup thing. The playoffs are about matchups. 82 games, whatever. What happens in a playoff series, and you know this, but I'll just remind you, is that you drill down, and the Warriors are really, really good. And that's why the one game thing scares me. Like, if you have to play the Kings or the Mavericks or whomever, or the Timberwolves, it's not that they're better than you, but they might be better than you on one night. That's it. They might be better than you on one night, and all of a sudden your season's over, and it's crazy. So that's why you got to stay out of the play-in situation. But over a seven-game series, and a young team like Oklahoma City, as much as I respect them, and I've said this before, I think they might be an 82-game team, not a 16-sprint team, only because they have so much depth, and you're going to have that depth kind of whittled down. And will Shai Gilgeous-Alexander get all those whistles? Rockets have a good mix. They've got a couple of veterans in there, but I still don't think, you know, they have enough there. They might be just a year away, but they're really, really good. But I think it's an advantage. The Warriors just saw them. I talked about it in the video yesterday when I looked at teams. So those are kind of the younger teams. And then the veteran teams, yeah, the Nuggets, but all of a sudden they just fired their coach. Like, internally, I'm still telling myself the matchups are still there. They're still the same, but there's something going on. We know that from like the 49ers season. Like, it's not all about on the field. If you're firing your coach with just a few games left in the season, something's not right. And so could that be spilling onto the court? Certainly it could. So there's something there. And then as far as the Lakers are concerned, I feared the Lakers, even though Luka Doncic is a better fit long-term with the Lakers, and I wouldn't be completely shocked if they moved LeBron in the offseason, because two ball-dominant players and the other guy standing around is not ideal from a Lakers perspective. But they were a bigger threat to the Warriors with Anthony Davis than they are with Luka Doncic. You can throw three or four guys at Luka. The Warriors have had success against Luka and the Mavericks. Now, LeBron's great, don't get me wrong, but they've had quite a bit of success against LeBron James, unless somebody's getting teabagged, and then that's an issue. But they should beat the Lakers in a series. I just like the matchup better than I have with Anthony Davis. But, you know, Reeves has been really, really good. They've had other guys step up. LeBron and Luka could find chemistry and magic together. I'm not saying that's going to be an easy series, but it almost looks like come playoff time that you got these young upstarts like the Rockets and the Thunder. And the question is, do I believe that their 82-game success can go and move over to the 16-game sprint, because it's different? And teams like the Warriors and the Lakers and the Nuggets have been there, but you start scratching your head on the Nuggets. Even though I don't love the matchup and I didn't move them, I had an opportunity because I wrote that piece and then I put it up and then I put the video up with it, and then Mike Malone got fired. And so I rewrote a little bit of it, but I still thought to myself, I don't know anything about this interim head coach, but still the matchups are the matchups with Denver. So it doesn't change a lot with me, but you'd be crazy to not think, okay, it's got to affect something a little bit, doesn't it? Like the fact that they just fired their coach with three games left in the year. There's something. That's not ideal. That's not the best. I told you I had a theory on it because they probably heard the speech and he's a red ass kind of a guy. And, you know, maybe they've just had enough. I mean, that makes sense to me, but it could be something deeper. I don't know. So anyway, that's where we are with the Warriors. So episode 109, playoff piece I've showed you. Go to johnlundunleashed.com. They crushed the Suns. I told you yesterday the Warriors could be the Suns without the Jimmy Butler trade, and the Suns almost got him. I do believe that Pods is the key to a deep playoff run. The way that he is playing right now, and I keep saying, can't keep expecting this, then he just keeps doing it. So Brandon Podziemski has been that good, and if you add the big three that they have, and you add Draymond Green, Curry, and Butler, and then it comes down to who's going to contribute, and if Pods can be that fourth guy in the bank that every night he's getting you 20, he's playing off Curry, he's making defenses at least think, because the game plan, they're not going to just say, okay, damn, Podziemski's really hot tonight, we're going to move some of this focus off of Curry and over to that guy. They're just not going to do that. They're going to dictate how they get beat. And I'm not saying they won't make adjustments throughout a series, but what I am saying is that Podziemski's going to have open looks. Moody's going to have open looks. Jonathan Kuminga's going to have opportunities to get to the rim. And it's just getting drilled into his head, and you can tell Jimmy Butler's talked to the guy a lot. Don't pull up. Don't shoot the three. Get to the rim. There's nobody that can stop you with your athleticism to get to the rim, and you're either going to get a call or you're going to get to the hoop, and that's the way that the playoffs are going to be. So embrace that kind of a thing. So those are the guys to me. I know what the big three guys are generally going to do. Now, can Curry have a 3.1-for-10 night? I guess. It's not likely, but I guess he could have that off night, and then other guys are going to have to pick him up. But the Pods that we've seen over the last, you know, like I said, Danny Emmerman had the exact notes over the last little while. That dude, if he plays like that, they could go far. There's no doubt. All right, so that's what the Warriors side of things looks like. How is everybody doing as far as that goes? Because I'm going to go over to the Dead Bats, not the Grateful Dead, which is the look they were going for, but kind of failed at, but the Dead Bats of the Giants, which we'll get into in just a second, and how concerned we need to be. Pods needs to be healthy. There's no doubt about it. In the playoffs, you kind of just got to suck it up. In the playoffs, you're not playing back-to-backs. It makes it so that it's conducive to getting some rest and hopefully, you know, the issues that he's had and any kind of thing like that. Oh, you know what? You are right, Mark. Did I not change the episode 109? Yeah, it is episode 110. Yeah, it's episode 110. Thank you for reminding me that. When I did the, this is episode one. Yeah, I just didn't change that part of it. That's going to bother me the entire show. Yeah, it is episode 110. Thank you for pointing that out. The word of the day is red ass. I know I've said red ass 55 times today. I'm going to stop doing that. Very redundant. But you know what's funny is that's what that was the perfect comparison for Jim Harbaugh. And then he's kind of changed a little bit. Like when Harbaugh was the 49ers head coach, it's the last time I'm going to say this, total red ass. And then he's kind of been like this funny, funky, I don't know, like almost reprised as like a Mike Tyson type where he just kind of says funky things all the time and people laugh. But that's not really who he is. But anyway, so I'm not going to say it again. I'm done using that term, but I'm glad that you pointed it out to me. Why is somebody bringing up Daisy Dukes today? Are we going in that direction here? Let's see here. All right. As far as the Warriors go. So good for the Warriors. Three games left. Still an absolute mess. Timberwolves gave you a gift, even though the Timberwolves could be tough. That's 14 and 18, and they've been good since the All-Star break. I wouldn't want to see them. They did get to the conference finals last year, but and like I said, the Western Conference to me, if Pods plays like that, they got a chance. All right, as far as the Bats are concerned, the Giants, again, only four hits. And as Bob Melvin said after the game, four hits ain't going to get it done. The good side is the Giants do have the second best ERA as far as starting pitchers are concerned. Let me get the box score up from last. Actually, you know what? I'm not popping up the box score for last night. I'm just going to look at hitters real quick. But let's see, box score, who the Warriors want, SF Giant. Here we go, right here. The Giants over the last couple of games. And you can kind of see, I did this by OPS. You can kind of see who's off to a good start, who's not. So Yastrzemski's been very good. Matos, for the Matos people in the house that are always screaming. Elliot Ramos has gotten off to a nice start. Jung Ho Lee's been very, very good. And then you kind of get into, all right, Flores got off to that hot start. He's had a game winner, a couple of home runs early. He's already got as many home runs as he had all of last year. So you got really no complaints there. I wish Casey Schmidt could hit. You know, I'm watching the game last night, and you saw the same play that I saw. Casey Schmidt cuts off a play at home because, you know, he charges the ball. He's an infielder, not just a first baseman. It's almost like he's wasted it over there because he's so good defensively. Now, he's a tick below Chapman at third, but he's still pretty good. Not a bad defensive shortstop, probably better than Adames. And second base-wise, he's a really good defensive second baseman. And first base-wise, he makes that play last night. Infield's drawn in. They cut off a run at the plate with the Reds already up 1-0. And he throws it across his body and hits Sam Huff, you know, right there. And they tagged the runner out, and Casey makes a great play. But, and he did, you know, hit the ball. What do you have, a double last night, I think, in his first at bat? I just wish he could consistently hit. And not because I bought a bunch of Casey Schmidt cards, just, you know, when he was down in San Jose. It's just the kid has a ton of talent, and he's got a lot of energy. And you could tell that if he was if he was hitting at the plate 280, you know, not hit 20 home runs, something like our 260, hit 20 home runs, whatever. He'd love to be a leader on the team, but he's kind of shy about it. So Casey Schmidt played first base last night. And he played it well. It's just he just doesn't consistently hit. Willy Adames, I'll play a cut for you. When I was there, obviously, last Friday, he had the game-winning hit. I'm not worried about Willy Adames. Lamont Wade Jr. was one of those guys at the beginning of the year. I know he had a three-hit game. He's struggling a little bit early out of the gate. You take that three-hit game away, and he's done absolutely nothing. And that's, you know, in the offseason, I know a lot of us were talking about Pete Alonso. He was never coming here for a one-year deal, a make-good, which is what he ended up signing with the Mets. I know it's a two- or three-year deal, but it's a one-and-out, basically. But they just that's where the upgrade comes. And if they can stay in it, the Giants, then I think the deadline, because they're under that number that I keep talking about, I think it's ridiculous that they're under the penalty number, but they are, and they are by $25 million. So to me, if they're in it, it's one of those situations where Buster can go to the powers that be in the purse strings and say, look, we need an upgrade offensively at first base because it's screaming. And I like Lamont Wade Jr., and it's nothing against him, and I get it. He'll get on base here, there, and everything else. But offensively, and Tyler Fitzgerald's probably a guy that they're going to start looking at as you look right there. He's hitting 179, did score the game-winning run on Friday. But Fitzgerald right now just isn't comfortable. And you can tell he's not real comfortable at the plate. Got to give him more than 28 at bats. I understand that. But Bailey's going to be in the lineup. There's no doubt. So if at the bottom of the, you know, the bottom of your stats as far as hitting is concerned, it doesn't surprise me to see Lamont Wade Jr. down there. And it doesn't surprise me to see Tyler Fitzgerald down there. And if that's why I wanted him to be the Super U. I wanted Alex Bregman, who, by the way, I think was the American League Player of the Week last week. I think it was Bregman, the American League Player of the Week, and Kyle Tucker for the Cubs. I think those were the two former Astros. But I wanted Fitzgerald to be kind of that Super U, but they've got him in at second base. It's extremely early in the season, so I'm not going to freak out and complain, but it's just something to keep an eye on. I think that Fitzgerald is something to keep an eye on. I think that Wade isn't going anywhere, but if a guy like Casey Schmidt could hit, they'd replace Lamont Wade Jr. Now against, you know, he's a lefty against a righty. I understand all those kind of things, but you got to have in the lineup who's going to hit. And we didn't think just because they got off to a great start offensively and they scored 10 last Friday against the Mariners and that win and all those kind of things that we were looking at an offensive juggernaut. But certainly what we've seen over the last couple of nights is mildly concerning. So here's what Bob Welvin said specifically about the start, the slow start that Willy Adames is off to.
He's got some RBIs, he's got some big hits for us, just, you know, hasn't gotten going yet, but not the only guy. So he will. I'm not too worried about him. Maybe just trying to do a little too much at times.
All right. I buy that. I'm not worried about Willy Adames. As I look at the Giants lineup, it's the same thing it was in the offseason. It's 30 at bats isn't going to make anything different, but it's Lamont Wade Jr. at first base. It's keeping a monitor on Tyler Fitzgerald, and I love Tyler Fitzgerald's athleticism. Like I said, I would have loved an established second baseman so that they could have used Tyler Fitzgerald as kind of a Super U. They're trying to see if Casey Schmidt can kind of be a Super U, because defensively, if he can play first, second, short, third, I'm sure he can play the outfield too. He's a good athlete, so he could probably play everywhere on the infield, but he's just not hitting. Fitzgerald makes a lot of sense because he's a really good athlete, and I'd like him to play somewhere every single day. Jung-Hoo Lee coming off an injury. I don't know, you know, is he going to play every day? Adames isn't going to come out a lot. Chapman's not going to come out a lot. So they're trying to see if they can get him at first base, especially with Wade off to a slow start. So they're going to have to monitor Wade. They're going to have to, who gets hurt as well. So then they're going to have to look at second base and say, okay, how long do we give Tyler Fitzgerald? Far more than 28 at bats. You know, you'd like to give him 100 at bats and say, okay, let's, you know, 100 is a nice round number. He's 28 through. Let's see what he does. And if that's the case, then we're going to have to start looking at situations. You know, Brett Wisely, guys like that, or at AAA. I haven't looked at AAA numbers. I have no idea who's off to what kind of a start, but he gave him a spark a little bit last year. So, yeah, this is not an offense. I guess my overall point here is this is not an offense that can sit around. I'm not panicking over it. I think that they'll be able to score runs. Willy Adames, again, it's not about your batting average or anything like that. It's about when you get the hit. And the last couple of nights, they haven't had anybody on. I mean, like I said, I went to Friday's game, there were 6 of 28. I don't know that I've even seen 28 runners with 22 runners left in scoring position, 6 of 28. So, yeah, it was a problem, and it's been a problem the last couple of nights. But as I look across the diamond, Bailey's going to play. That's why it's so important the guys that have to hit, have to hit. Like, Willy Adames is off to a slow start. Well, Fitzgerald, not saying you could predict it, but you didn't know. Lamont Wade Jr., Matt Chapman's going to be what Matt Chapman is. Bailey's going to be a defender more than an offensive guy. That's why it's very exciting that Ramos gets off to that start. That discussion we have about whether he's a first half or a second half, which Ramos are we getting? We've gotten the first half Ramos. Jung-Hoo Lee has been very solid, both offensively and defensively. And Mike Yastrzemski's off to a good start, so you can't bitch and moan about Mike Yastrzemski like we normally do in right field. And go, we need an upgrade. And I do that. I do that all the time. So really, it's first and second base and short. Short's going to come around. You cannot have a bunch of guys struggling that should not be struggling because they just aren't good enough offensively to deal with that. And that's kind of what's going on right now. So we'll see if the day will help, if the ball will carry, those kind of things. And then it's a really important as I go down to Verlander. I skipped the City Connects because I already went through some City Connects if you want to hear that a little bit later. But it's a really important start for Justin Verlander. He was able to joke in the clubhouse afterwards, and I have that up in my shorts on YouTube, where he just said, yeah, I appreciate them cheering me, and it was a great opening day atmosphere. I wish I could have been out there longer. Like, it's okay for a minute, but we get caught up in the name of Justin Verlander, and we give him the benefit of the doubt. We're like, oh, it's Justin Verlander, benefit of the doubt. 42-year-old Justin Verlander doesn't get benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's unfortunate, but to me, this becomes a really, really important start because I know what Logan Webb's given me. It goes back to the bank stuff. Okay, I know what Logan Webb's given me in the bank. Robbie Ray, I think, is what Robbie Ray is. I think that Robbie Ray is fine. He had, again, the first start, first 15 gone, and then he the wheels come off, but then second start, he looks really, really good. So I'm feeling good about Robbie Ray. Again, Birdsong was good last night, so was Roop. It wasn't Roop's fault that they lost last night, and then followed up by Birdsong, who was really, really good. So both of those guys could be solid in the rotation. And I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that as Justin Verlander gets ready for his third start as a Giant second at home, that he should be taken out of the rotation. I'm not saying that. But I do think the beginning of the year, a lot of people had him penciled as the number two, even though that's probably what Robbie Ray is. Ray's probably the two, based on the way they've pitched. Verlander's really been the five. And so, you know, Hicks has been fairly solid. Roop has been this start better than the first start. Birdsong first outing wasn't great. It was okay, but last night he was really dominant. I mean, the fact that he can hump it up that 98 or 99 when he needs to reach back and get it, and then the ball had a lot of bite on it last night, he looked really, really good. So they've got some pitching depth, and because Justin Verlander is Justin Verlander by name, not by performance yet, but by name, yeah, they're going to give him, and Bob Melvin is going to give him the respect that he deserves. I understand that. But now if he struggles again in this outing, there's going to be some rumblings to say, does he need to fix something? Is there something mechanical? Is he not feeling right? Is he? Those whispers are going to start today if Justin Verlander struggles. Because that's, I was in the park last Friday and he struggled. And, you know, like I said, it was opening day and people are feeling good and it's okay. And he was okay his first start. He wasn't good in his second start. But if it is now another start where he struggles, you're going to start thinking, all right, how many starts do we give him if he continues to struggle this way? Probably six or eight. And then you start thinking to yourself, okay, does he need a stint? And it's not that he's actually hurt. It's just sometimes what they'll do is they'll put a guy on IR for a minute. They'll work on some mechanics, try to work some things out early in the year, bring him back, see what's going on. I mean, I don't know that Verlander would absolutely want to do that. He knows his body better than anybody else. I mean, he gets himself ready. A couple of years ago, the guy was, 18-4? I mean, he was ridiculous. 2 years ago, he was still pretty good. Last year, like I said, it was all about the neck injury and he struggled and all this kind of thing. So he's not a guy, despite an amazing name and a Hall of Fame resume, and he's going to the Hall of Fame. Like he could tell the Giants, inform the Giants today, I'm done. And he'd be going to the Hall of Fame. And so we kind of confuse that sometimes with he's Justin Verlander. But he's not Justin Verlander who has any credibility in this organization. So you got to build that back up. Yeah, with the Tigers, he was awesome. With the Astros, he was awesome. He did have a stint with the Mets. Not so great. But he comes in here. We have a certain expectation based on his name, but so far he hasn't done it. So this is only start three, and I'm not overreacting to it. It would be really nice if he could put a nice start together. And by the way, the Giants have – here's the positive side, where you look at the bats the last two nights and you go, bleh. They have a 2.62 team ERA. So they have the second-best ERA in baseball. It's only 10 games. I understand those kind of things. Or 11 games, I guess, now with 8-3. So still, I mean, they're off to a nice start from a pitching standpoint. So that's all I'm saying. All right, we will move on to a couple of NFL things in a minute before I got to jump out of here and get down to the park. And like I said, stay with me today on John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective. Plus, follow along on Twitter/X at John Lund Radio, because I do a lot of stuff. I don't necessarily do play-by-play, but I'll send you stuff and pictures and videos, and then I'll get on the field, like I said, beforehand. And then afterwards, I'll send you stuff from the clubhouse, and I'll do a lot of that through YouTube right here on John Lund Unleashed. But also, during the game, if you're looking for content, I'll kick it out at John Lund Radio on X. So please make sure that you're following along. Although I'll throw it up on everything that I can. And like I said, I have this setup that everybody looks at me like, what do you think, you're taking over the place? Like, what is wrong with you? So I'll do that a little bit later on today. I do have a little bit. I got a little bit of NFL stuff for you. We are, let's see, Justin Verlander. If Justin Verlander is not the same pitcher when he was younger, he may have aged out. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, the guy knows his body, but Father Time is undefeated. You don't need me to tell you that. And so he's 42, and we'll see. I mean, he seems to be one of those guys that has just the arm that's going to go on forever. I don't know enough about pitching to know mechanically what's going on with him. He didn't really mention after the game. Like I said, I stood there, listened to the media, and stuck my phone in there for, you know, 10 minutes, and he seemed to be fine with everything. It wasn't mechanical. He's not injured. So we'll see. But I just know at the beginning of the year, a lot of people, when he signed that $15 million deal, like, well, he's going to slot at number two. And I'm like, what? Like, I said this right when he was signed, and I'm not saying this because he's struggling today. He might throw seven and, you know, two hitter over seven innings. He's capable of doing that. But I was saying when he got when he was first signed, I was looking at it going, I'd make him a 5 or a 4 and just say, look, if he gives me something, that's awesome. But I'm not going to walk into the season saying that they're, you know, a 42-year-old guy coming off a neck injury, missed the majority of last year, is going to be my number 2 starter. I just can't do that. By name, you're like, Justin Verlander? Yeah, if he was 32, he's 42. So I don't know what to expect from Justin Verlander. You'd like to think, okay, he's Justin Verlander. He'll figure this thing out. But at some point, everybody, like you said, Steve, everybody ages out. You're like, so that's what's going on. Let's see here. What else do we got going on? All right, let me move to this. And these are my friends, and I'll try to do this in a quick fashion because what time we got? We got about 9:05 Pacific time. So I don't want to leave you too early here, but I got to jump here in a few minutes. But I want to play. I could have saved this for tomorrow, but the guys at SF Niner Data on X and Instagram, you should follow along with these guys because they do a really good job and they do the charts that I want to do but don't want to do. So anyway, what they did was they took the consensus here for defensive linemen, offensive linemen, and edge rushers, which the Niners need all of those guys, trenches, people. And what they did is they did a consensus big board on all these guys. And then they put in all the, you know, 40 yards and 3 cones and whatever. I mean, it shows athleticism, but I'm not really overly excited about certain things like that. But I put red marks by guys that I really, really think would fit with the 49ers, which means they're going to take any player but the guy that I've red marked, like Mason Graham, for example, and they need everything inside. They have Nick Bosa and the rest of the defensive line is like, hello. But Mason Graham's going to be gone. Kenneth Grant, I've taken in a mock before at 22, and he's a monster. Derek Harmon, I'm not the biggest fan, but you know what? He could be really good. Walter Nolan is super fast and quick, but some people are questioning his character. So I don't know if the Niners would have him very high up if they didn't like his character. Tyler Williams, to me, at Ohio State, is just kind of a plugger. I'm not going to go through every one of these guys. Darius Alexander's interesting. I haven't seen enough of him to know, but he's a really good athlete. The guy that I really like as a sleeper, Omar Norman Lott. I sound like Kruger here. 6'2", 291 out of Tennessee. He was in a really heavy rotation at Tennessee, and I think he could be really, really good. I know Kruger hates this guy, Deontay Walker, you see from Kentucky, 6'7", 331. He had a great junior year, not a good senior year. Jordan Phillips, run stuffer. Ty Robinson, I like him because he ran a 4.83. You don't need to run 40-yard dashes, but it shows his athleticism. But anyway, so there's a bunch of guys from the defensive line that I've marked that I kind of like. And the 49ers, one, if not two of those players, probably two of those players that you see on that board are going to be taken by the 49ers. Probably two. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I don't think they're going to take Kenneth Grant, but I would like Kenneth Grant because I think he's a combination of – because what you see here is Mason Graham's a little bit different than anybody – but you have guys like Grant who are really, really big, or you have guys like Walter Nolan who get by in like quickness. Because you can see in Nolan's case, 6'4", 296, it's not like he's small. But then in Grant's case, you've got a guy that's 331, or Kylie Williams is 334, or Collins 332, Walker 331. Like, they have monster defensive tackles. And I think the best way to do that is have like one of those big monster guys and then have a quick guy next to him. I love that kind of a combination. And Grant is a big guy, but has some quicks to him, whereas a lot of those other guys are just run stuffers, which is fine. But that's why I like Grant so much. But I don't know that the Niners are going to take him unless they move down a little bit. And Mason Graham, to me, would be the guy that the 49ers would love the most amongst anybody in this draft, but I just don't think he's going to fall. So there's the defensive lineman. Nice job by the SF data guys doing that. And then again, consensus big board for offensive linemen. Will Campbell, I just don't think is going to be there. Membu is probably not going to be there, but I like him. Banks, I took him in my second mock draft, but I don't absolutely love him. But I don't know what there is not to love. I mean, he's 6'5", 315. He's got pretty good measurables. He's a good athlete. He can play inside, outside, which you like. Booker is a pure guard. Zabel is a guy, I guess I'm afraid of North Dakota State because that's where Trey came from. But a lot of people think he can play guard, center, tackle. I hesitate only because if you're the master of no positions, but you could play three positions, I want a guy who's kick-ass at one position. Just if you're a kick-ass guard and you're going to root people out of there, then great. That's what I want. Tackle-wise, the guy out of Minnesota I had in my first mock draft, the kid whose last name I can't say at Arizona, 6'4", 324. I'd love him. I mean, that's a big-time guard. But the other thing about it is, again, I'm not huge into 40s, but a 4.95 for a guy that's 324 means he's pretty quick. Lying on his feet, and so I think he'd be a guard. And in this offense, this is the problem with Aaron Banks, just couldn't move well enough. So I like that guy quite a bit. Jared Wilson from Georgia's the center. Guys like this, I think you're going to see a guy like Emory Jones or Anthony Belton, like a later guy like that. Jones has a lot of upside. I think the Niners might go for a guy like that. So they're going to take one or two of those guys that you see on your board right there. And then finally, this is edge guys. And because they need offensive and defensive interior guys so much, and in the offensive tackle spot as far as the O-line, that I think that maybe edge rusher is going to be a luxury. So I don't know that they're going to go early, but one guy that I've started to kind of not, I'm not going to call him a draft crush, but a guy that I've kind of started to really like, that Carter's not going to fall. Like, he's number two on that board. If he were to fall, the Niners, like if he was like in the 7-8 range and still on the board, if I was the Niners, I'd go up and get Abdul Carter. He's that good. But the guy that I'm really starting to like is Jaylon Walker. And the reason I do like this guy is because he's an off-ball linebacker who then on third down could go down and rush the passer. So maybe, I don't know that he could be Dre Greenlaw's replacement. I'm not sure. But a lot of people think he could do that. And then on third down, he puts his hand in the dirt and he's opposite Bosa pass rushing, like that kind of a versatile player. Now, again, he's listed at 6'1", 243, so our offensive tackle is going to swallow him up maybe. But he was really, really good in college, and he might be able to do both. Mykael Williams, the same kind of a thing. He's a little bit bigger at 6'5", 260. Great pass rusher, great upside. Didn't always show it at Georgia. And then you get into a little bit down that list near the bottom. Oladejus, the guy from UCLA that apparently the 49ers like so much. Kyle Kennard, I think, is underrated. He's an edge out of South Carolina, really good size. Ivy's a guy at 6'6", 275 out of Mississippi that I really, really like. And same with Jones of LSU, the two guys on the bottom there. Very similar players, 6'6", 270, 280. Bigger guys are going to hold the edge a little bit more, bat down some passes. I just really like that. I think they can move inside on passing downs. So let's say you had a guy like Ivy who was playing edge on like first down and, you know, and setting the edge. And then he moves inside, or Savion Jones moves inside and become pass rushing defensive tackles. Think Charles Omenihu. That's kind of the size that those two guys have. So then an Omenihu type who moves inside, and then a guy like Jaylon Walker could be a linebacker. And then on pass rushing downs, he moves down to the edge. And so you've got a guy like Savion Jones inside pass rushing, Bosa on one side and Walker on the other side who plays linebacker, but then moves down on passing downs, like that kind of thing. I don't know if the Niners would be into that, but that's kind of what I was thinking. So anyway, is there a favorite on that list for you? We are, what is today? The 9th? Today's the 9th, right? So 15 days, 2 weeks from tomorrow. I don't know if you love the draft like I love the draft, but that's really cool. And thanks to the guys from, as you can see in the bottom right, SF Data Niners. Follow those guys on X and or Twitter. They do a really nice job. So that's a consensus of all the top guys and what their boards are. And so those guys put it in order, which is really cool. And I don't have that kind of day. I just don't have that kind of time in my day to do that. So very, very cool that those guys would put that together. So that is the draft needs part of the show. So episode 109, playoff piece, you've seen at johnlundunleashed.com. They crushed the Suns. Pods, I think, is the key. Brandon Podziemski, I think, is the key come playoff time. I know what Curry's given me. I know what Green's given me. If Podziemski is the guy that's been around the last couple of weeks, absolutely. The Timberwolves have a 24-point lead blown with about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They lose last night to Milwaukee, 34-3 run. Michael Malone, the latest to be fired by an NBA team. The Nuggets have 3 games left in the season. The big question to you as a Warriors fan is, does that change a projection if the Warriors and the Nuggets match up in the playoffs? And initially, I think to myself, and I wrote this at johnlundunleashed.com on the teams that the Warriors want to and don't want to face, is I thought to myself, Jokic still there, Murray still there, Michael Porter Jr., all those guys that they normally have. Now, their bench is really thin, because apparently one of the things that that ownership had and on odds, and they fired their GM Calvin Booth too, but the one thing that they were at odds with, apparently, according to reports, was Malone was staying with Russell Westbrook. Ownership group was going, why is this guy playing? Like many other teams have said that about Russell Westbrook, why he's bounced around the last number of years. He doesn't really fit any system because he cannot shoot and he's got to be ball dominant. And everything goes through Jokic there. So what you want around Jokic is you want shooters, right? Just like LeBron and just like Doncic. Guys who control the offense, you want shooters around those guys because they're going to draw a crowd and you're going to kick it out. And you're going to kick it out to Westbrook. Doing! Like, he's just, like, you kidding me? He's bricklaying. So he doesn't really fit because he's a ball dominant player, and you've got a ball dominant player in Jokic, and everything goes through him. And so you want to have a shooter away from him. So I don't really know what the thought process was in bringing him in. I never know. You know, like when Houston had him and Harden together. Well, you have a ball dominant guy in Harden, you have a ball dominant guy in Westbrook. And if one of them doesn't have the ball, then the other one's standing around. Now Harden can shoot well enough to make that work, but Westbrook can't shoot. So if Jokic, who's very, you know, he's dangerous, he's got the ball and he's going to score, but he's even more dangerous when he's kicking it somewhere, right? And making a pass. So then now he's drawing the crowd. There's Westbrook in the corner. He kicks it out. That's the perfect play. The shot has to be taken. So Westbrook takes the shot. He hits the rim, scrapes paint off the rim, and the Nuggets are going, what the hell, bro? And so maybe that was one of the reasons why they have a very short bench. So that's an issue. But Mike Malone fired. I just think when you have a fiery coach like that, they have a short fuse and it burns fast. And all of a sudden you're Denver and you're going, he's out, which blows my freaking mind, by the way, in the sense that he's the only coach to lead you to an NBA championship. And he just did it a couple of years ago. Do you expect to be like, do you think you're going to be on like a Spurs or a Warriors run here? Because I don't see that with the Nuggets. They've generally kept that team together and they've done a really nice job. They just haven't been able to find depth to go along with that team. And that's, I don't know, is that Mike Malone's fault? I mean, Calvin Booth, he got fired too. But anyway, I find it to be weird, but I do not think it changes a matchup with the Warriors and the Nuggets. I could be totally wrong because Mike Malone is a good coach. So there's that. Standings I showed you, the Timberwolves losing that game, but everybody else stayed at 47-32. Bats are quiet for the Giants. I'm not overly concerned at this point, but you're seeing Lamont Wade Jr. off to a slow start, and you're seeing Tyler Fitzgerald off to a slow start. So keep monitor those situations. Those are the places that could be changed. City Connects in action. What are your thoughts? I did not go out and see a lot of response on that, so give me your thoughts there. And then, like I said, Justin Verlander, I would call it a big start, even though it's his third start of the year. I would say that it is a big start for Justin Verlander. So there you go. Give me your thoughts on that. Nuggets should go get Mike Brown. Isn't that what the Kings did after they fired Mike Malone? They went after Mike Brown. Mike Brown is a great coach. I'm not saying that. I'll see. And yeah, he's a lot of times what you see with coaches, and you know this in professional sports, is like you had a hard ass before and you have a guy that's a little bit different. I'm not saying Mike Brown's soft. He's not, but he's different than Michael Malone. So that could be it. Yeah, I still think the Nuggets are tough. I mean, I'm with you. I still think they're too. I think they're really good, and I think the matchup's really good. Like I said, there had to be something behind the scenes. Mike Malone could wear on you. I could totally see that. So I think that's something. Kuminga, the X Factor. I think he'll be one of them. But all I'm saying is that if this is Brandon Podziemski, this guy that we see right now is the guy that we see in the playoffs. Good luck. As Liam Neeson said, good luck. They're going to be really tough because he's going to be open. That's the thing is with the, and as we go into this and you drill down into a playoff series, always everybody's first thought on the Warriors is stop Curry, stop Curry, stop Curry, stop Curry. And it opens it up for everybody else. And they are willing, most teams, not willing, that's the wrong word, but if they're going to give you something, they're going to give Moody shots. They're going to give Podziemski shots. Now, will they give him a little bit more attention? Let's see, he's beating the hell out of him in a series. Of course, they'll adjust. Everybody adjusts. But if he adjusts to Podziemski, it means you're giving less attention to Curry. It means you're giving less attention to Jimmy Butler. So that's a good thing for the Warriors because now it's like, what do we do here? You know, the dam is leaking and there's only so many things that we can do to plug it up. And if we can't, like Podziemski is scoring 20, what do we do? I guess we take a little bit of the focus off Curry. No, we don't. Like you're in a huddle, right? Or you're between games and you're watching film and you're like, this guy's killing us. Podziemski too is killing us. What do we do here? I guess we're gonna have to stay home a little bit more and single Steph. No. I don't care if Steph's 0-for-60 in the series. They're not going to do that. So anyway, Mason Graham, NFL draft wise, if he's there. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't run it up fast enough. Here's the one thing I'm going to say about Mason Graham is I like the guy a lot. Every single show you see, like I watch all these NFL draft dorky shows, and every one you see is like, he's a safe pick. He's got a high floor. He's got, you know, a lot of times teams look at that and they go, eh. So there's going to be guys who slip in the draft. Will Campbell might. This is off the top of my head. Will Campbell might. You know, he's got short arms. I could see Mason Graham maybe just because they see a workman-like defensive tackle and they don't think that's sexy enough maybe. and owners do get involved in this kind of stuff, even though you don't think they do. Like Jerry Jones is sitting in there. And even though they would be best served by ignoring him, sometimes, you know, these guys get, you know, pounding the table. Jimmy Haslam of the Browns, like he's involved. There are certain coaches and everybody who's, or certain owners who are involved. And so like he's being projected to Jacksonville at five. I don't know how much Shad Khan is involved. I know he's sitting in the draft room, but a lot of times as an owner, it's like, God, is that a sexy enough pick? Why don't we do this? Or why don't we do that? Jacksonville has been one of those teams that has kind of gone a different way a lot of times in the draft. So if he doesn't go five, you know, somebody, you know, the Raiders are sitting there. Do they pounce on him because he slides? I don't know. The Jets, they're pretty set defensively. They kind of need offense. They may go offensive tackle. So all of a sudden now Mason Graham's dropping eight or nine. And I'm not suggesting that the 49ers move up. But as you pointed out, I could just see a guy like that or a guy like Campbell or a guy, you know, they're really good players. But where a team would just go, is that a sexy enough pick? And all of a sudden he's sitting there at 11 and you're going, pfft. It happens every, you know, Jalen Carter went 10. I know what kind of a situation that was. Or Warren Sapp went 12 into that. But a guy like Micah Parsons went to the Cowboys at 12. Like there always seems to be a slider. And then there's a team in that, you know, 10, 11, 12 range going, seriously? Like, really? This guy is still there? So we'll see. It happens every single year. But, yeah, he's a no-brainer. And I've said that the whole time. Like, if he's there, yeah, he's a plug-and-play defensive tackle, and that's what you need. And then you could get, I think, so next to him, he's about 300 pounds, so he's not overly huge. But what I'd love to see next to him, and there's a ton of these guys in that draft, then you get the Jordan Phillips or the, you know, that 330-pounder. That is going to open it up for him. He's going to occupy two blockers. Mason Graham's a penetrator. All of a sudden, Warner's behind that. Now your defense is cooking with gas. You know, he's still got a long way to go, but I mean, that would be an amazing pick. I don't know if he gets there, but that would be an amazing, amazing pick. You couldn't be more right, Skills. Pods was often at the season start, completely different baller. Yeah, I don't know if it was injuries. I don't know exactly what it was. I don't know if it was. And look, we act like this doesn't exist. Like these guys just come out of a locker like a robot. I must play basketball. But part of it is, you know, in the offseason, and we debated this a lot on the show, they made Pods reportedly untouchable. And as good as Brandon Podziemski is right this minute, and it's really good, he's not an untouchable type. You know, there's certain pillars of your organization, Steph Curry, and he's still not untouchable, especially at the age of 37. Like if somebody came to you and said, hey, Victor Wembanyama, and, you know, the Spurs have all these nice young pieces, like, I'm sorry, Steph, I love you, and we want you to come back to the organization, but they're offering us Victor Wembanyama right now, and he can set our franchise up for the next 15 years. I love you, but you're going to have to finish your career in South Texas playing for, I don't know, who's going to be the head coach. Maybe it's going to be Mike Malone in San Antonio. But like Victor Wembanyama, yeah. What is he, 22? Like I'm trying, yeah. So nobody's untouchable. And so in the offseason, when they made him untouchable and there was such that stuff about it. Now, maybe he was not healthy, whatever it is, but there's a pressure on you. You're going into a second year. People liked you as a rookie. You were kind of a surprise and nobody really expected anything out of you. So it's kind of like, this is cool. Right on. And then the second year comes and it's like, okay, we expect you to be better. The organization called you an untouchable in the offseason. Apparently they wouldn't trade you for like a Lauri Markkanen, something like that, which I would have in a minute. Absolutely. And I still would to this day, but Podziemski's playing great basketball. But he's not to the point where he's an untouchable guy. I mean, you got to give up something to get something. I like him a lot. Did I think he was going to be this good? No. But he's got to do it over an entire season. And for me, not even an entire season. If you're this guy in the playoffs, you know, kind of the complimentary piece that Jordan Poole was in, say, 22, but Pods is a much better, well-rounded player. He can defend. He takes the charges. He can rebound, run the offense. Like, he's in control. But if he's going to get these open looks, and I'm sure Steve Kerr's told him, look, man, as hot as you are right now, keep it going. Just roll. And if he plays with this kind of confidence, they're going to be tough to beat. That's all I'm saying as far as that goes. But nobody, he's not a touch. I'm not saying that. All right, what else do we have? Oh, no, neither would I. No way. Nope. I wouldn't swap Pods for Poole. Look, Poole's had a nice year. It's just one of those things, and we talk about it all the time. Somebody's got to score, rebound, assist, defend, blah, 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 on a bad team, and they're going to, you know, he scored a bunch of points. He did it to a certain extent with the Warriors. I like that Podziemski has more things that he can do on a basketball court. So let's say Pods, for the sake of conversation, goes 2 for 13 on a night. Well, if Jordan Poole goes 2 for 13 on a night, well, you never know with what they're going to lose anyway. He could go 13 for 13, they're going to lose Washington. But if he goes 2 for 13, that's what he offers. If Podziemski goes 2 for 13, you don't love it, but he probably grabbed 8 boards, had 5 assists, 2 steals, and took a charge. he's got a much more well-rounded game. So give the, this is another thing where you start looking at the front office and you go, I think they got him at what, 20 or 21 when they picked him last year, 21. You looked at it and you go, yeah, that's pretty good. And he was a late bloomer, came from Illinois. Of course, he was at Santa Clara, so they maybe had a little bit of an advantage there, but nice. Hi, Kenny. Look, I'm a Scattabo guy. My kid's at Arizona State, and I watched a ton of Cam Scattabo, and I know he ran like a 4.65. People are trying to say he's a fullback. I don't think he's a fullback, but I like that guy. I mean, I like him a lot. Yeah, I mean, hi, Frank. I love that guy. I love Membu, but he's come on fast in the process. A lot of it is due to athleticism, but if you go back and you watch, and what do I know? I don't know what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to offensive linemen. But what I saw, and you know what people point out to me who are really, really smart, who know this stuff, and people that you talk to, people love him. People just love him. They love his mental makeup and all that kind of stuff, and that's big with the Niners. So just letting you know, he could. He could absolutely be a any of these guys. Like I said, it's 50-50. Lottery tickets in the first round. After like the second round, it's like throwing blindfold darts. I mean, it's just what it, that's the draft. Everybody expects certain things out of the draft, and you should do this and that. They need like six starters out of this draft, though. I just know that. I've said this again and again. This has to be like the 86 draft for the Niners. Go look it up. I mean, it's got to be that good, but I don't know if it's going to be. John, Pauly and Tony on at 8 for the night flight. Hit me up for the next bottom of the pint. Yeah, bottom of the pint Friday, by the way. God, today's Wednesday. So this is really cool. Bottom of the pint with Kruger and I come in, grab some beers, peanuts, hot dogs, whatever, and we're going to watch the game, and we do this every Friday. Now, I didn't do it last Friday because it was at the opener, but we're going to do this every Friday. And this one, they're in New York against the Yankees, and it's going to be a 3:30 Pacific start. I think it's 3:30. So we're going to be on the air and during the Giants game. So on Friday, jump in here. I think 3:30 Pacific time, and it's Yankees and Giants, and we're going to be doing a show live from live on the show. So both of us, the Krug Show and John Lund Unleashed, and that's on Friday, and that's Bottom of the Pint, and we'll be doing that every Friday. So we did it for opening day, and that wasn't on a Friday. It was on Thursday. Then I skipped last week. Krug still did it, and then I'll be back this Friday with it. Bottom of the Pint with the Krug Show and John Lund Unleashed, Friday at about 3:30, I think is what we're going to do. So very, very cool. You know what? I don't know if I have it. I got to see it. I got to take a look. Did you email it to me? Because if you did, I'll take a look at it. I did not see it. Let's see. Yeah, look, I like Scattabo. I really do. I just don't know what he's going to do. But like, if you look at that Texas performance, the guy can catch the ball. The guy could, you know, he can run the ball. I just don't know if he can he block? Because if he could block, I mean, could you imagine him as a fullback? He's not that big, though. He's like 5'10", 215. You know, people think it because Scattabo runs over everybody. Everybody thinks he's like 225, 230. He's like, he's 215. And I've seen that he's not a big guy. So I don't know if he can put on 10 pounds. He's already rocking a 4.65. But he is an underrated athlete. He can score. He can run. He can catch. And I know he's a 49ers fan. So he's probably watching this, by the way, but I like him. All right. Quickie today. Yeah. Not too bad. I mean, we're an hour seven into this whole thing. And I mean, we could wrap it at any point. I just want to make sure. Yeah, we will be chugging on Friday. I will unveil a different beer, by the way, than the citrus Coronas. I was in the store yesterday and bought some because I didn't want to be made fun of the Senorita beers, which, by the way, very tasty, but I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to do that because I got made fun of and you know, I feel peer pressure. So I got something different. Hi, James. It is great to see you, my friend. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, James. Good morning, everybody. Like I said, if you were new in the room at John Lund Unleashed or at the Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube, please make sure you say hello to everybody. And no matter where you are, whether you're I can see people from Twitch, Instagram, all that kind of stuff, all on the same page, Facebook, all this stuff. So if you're in any of those rooms, please make sure you say good morning. That's a nice little, yeah. Did you come up with that? You need to make that a t-shirt, man. That's a good idea. That's a really good idea, actually. All right. I think that'll do it for today. I'm sorry that I ran short today, but there's a couple more things real quick. Let me do this. Even though this isn't really Caboose-ish, I'm going to play a Caboose Pistol Open only because I told you again and again and again and again that I would do it because I had to take out that one music. So I made a new one. Let me see if I have it. Yep, I do. Here we go, right here. I made a new Caboose Pistol for you because I wanted to play the Caboose Pistol Opens before the finale of the show. But the one that I had not an illegal, but I hadn't paid for the rights for the music. So they kept flagging me on it and making me take it out of the show. So I just made a new one. So here you go.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. Here's John.
All right, so there you go. A little upbeat music to end the show. This is not your typical Caboose Pistol, but I just thought I'd show it to you because remember we were talking about food in the ballpark and I was talking about crickets the other day. Somebody, it wasn't Seattle. Somebody else came up with chocolate-covered crickets, which I'm just not doing that. I don't care how many beers I have, whatever. But this is at Braves games, and they just do this down south. Texas, Georgia, places like this. Two Angus patties, candied bacon, a house-smoked brisket, red slaw, onion rings, curly fries with Carolina barbecue and Coca-Cola barbecue. I mean, look, that looks really good. It looks really messy. I don't know that I could eat that in my seat. But the other part of it is two, I mean, think about this, two Angus patties, bacon, brisket, slaw, onion rings, deep fried, curly fries, deep fried, and then a bunch of barbecue sauce. Now, am I saying that that doesn't sound and look amazing? It does. But my arteries are screaming right now. I just don't think I could eat it. Like, could I have a couple of bites? Would I like to see it? Would I like me and five of my friends? I have no idea what that would cost. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's $30. That's at least $30. It might be $35 because you're looking at two patties, brisket, the whole nine yards. Yeah, I bet that's $35. Which, you know, look, you have Monopoly money when you go to the ballpark. But man, I mean, I'd love to, like, you know, two of my friends, you know, like four of us go in on it. We just kind of eat off of it. And I don't know how you do it. And you can't do it from your seat. I mean, there's just no way. And then you wash that down with a couple of beers. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's lunch and dinner on a certain night. But I'd love to do that. And that's my whole point that I made the other day is I love ballpark food. And I love the fact that they just go absolutely bonkers and wild for it. They just, like, this would never be in a restaurant. In fact, they should. And I think they have opened a restaurant. It's just called Ballpark Food. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't you go to a place called Ballpark Food and then that's what they would serve? They would just serve like burgers like that with brisket, onion rings, like just totally like your doctor would just faint, right? Your cardiologist would be like, no, you cannot eat that. No, 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 no. And then you just eat it. And it's a place called Ballpark Food. And you'd probably have to have like defibrillators and all kind of stuff like that because there's just no way. But I mean, you look at that and you're like, your mind says, oh yeah, I'd mow that. And your body says, there's no chance. Like, you can't eat that, but it looks amazing. It looks amazing. I'm going to say $35. You got to find out what that thing costs. But anyway, not your typical sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol fare, but I just wanted to show that to you. That looks amazing. Amazing. So there you go. All right. Anything else? Would you eat that? Would you order that? Would you pay for that? Let's see. I don't know if somebody could eat that in one bite, man. That looks pretty massive. That looked pretty good. I don't think I could do that, especially from your seat. I don't know. Like sometimes when people come back with all that kind of stuff and they got nachos and they got stuff all over the place, and you're like, oh, that's all over your shirt, bro. Yeah, you had me at candied bacon. You ever make candied bacon before? Oh my God. There's a bar and where is it? In San Francisco. There's a bar in San Francisco. I'm trying to think of it. And for happy hour, they do candied bacon and it's got to make you drink 10 times more beer than you normally would because they have a girl who just walks around. It's amazing. And she's got a plate and they just have piled candy bacon on there and you can't take more than one. And she's just like, just take one, take one, take one, take one. And she's walking around. They do that in happy hour. It doubles your beer consumption. I said 10 times, probably doubles it. Not 10 times, but it probably doubles your beer consumption. Honestly, super good. Oh my God. What else do we have today? That's a quadruple bypass burger. Yeah. You know, like you eat one of those. I don't know. The calorie count in a day, isn't it like 2000 calories is your normal day? That's got to be 10,000 easy. And again, I'm no nutritionalist, but if we have a nutritionalist, by the way, please hit me up. John@JohnLundUnleashed.com. John@JohnLundUnleashed.com. We need experts for the show constantly. I would love to have an expert nutritionalist just to see what the heck is going on. Yeah, he used to be huge. Like Darren Arell used to be huge, and then I don't know where he is now. He's gone to a bunch of different places, and I'm sure he's fine making a living. You always see him flash, you know, rare cards and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know how he does what he does. It's a pretty good gig, right? I mean, gotta be. That's not a bad gig at all. All right, what else do we got? Oh yeah, Chuck Norris could eat that in one bite. I mean, not it'd be like an appetizer bite to him. You know, that'd be like a meatball on a toothpick to him. You know those kind of deals. Those are good, by the way. Anything else? All right, that'll do it for today. Coronary burger, holy shit. Yeah, it looks good. I mean, I'd love to eat it. I'd love to have like two or three people. I'd like to have like three bites of it. I'd like to have the burger part with the brisket on it and a little bit of barbecue sauce, maybe a little bit of the onion ring. Just let me try one bite of that thing. That's all I want. Like, I'll give you $10 for it, but give me three bites for like $10. Yeah, I have no problem with that. First Watch here in Arizona has a bacon called Million Dollar Bacon. You got to tell me more about that, because who doesn't love bacon? Papa's the only person I know who doesn't like bacon, like at a really high level. Like, he says, I can take it or leave it. But he doesn't like donuts. He doesn't like any of that kind of stuff. And to me, it's like every day I'm like fighting against bacon, donuts. I can't do it. It's like, you got to be kidding me. I'm trying to lose weight, man. Summer's getting here. My God. All right. That'll do it for the day. Episode 100, playoff piece, crushing the Suns, pods of the key, T-Wolves choked, Mike Malone fired, standings, SF bats quiet. I'll go out to the yard today and try to wake them up for you. City Connects, what did you think? Justin Verlander, big start, even though it's number three. Draft needs, I showed you that. Thanks to our friends at SF Niner Data. Make sure you're following them. Draft needs and random stuff. Everybody have a wonderful Wednesday. Keep your alerts on at johnlundunleashed.com on YouTube. I'll be sending all sorts of stuff out from the clubhouse today, and I'm going to run down in the and get into the dugout, talk to Bob Melvin, and also on X today, follow along, because I'll send stuff out from my X account, which is at John Lund Radio. Bay Area Sports Collective, both Polymax Particles with Polymac and Creative Tony. That is tonight at 8 o'clock, and Tolbert's got a show this afternoon as well, so make sure you tune in to Tommy. In fact, I know this because on opening day, he was there. Kirk Reeder is back in St. Louis, and he's got the world famous, what is he called? Whatever his clubhouse is that he's got behind his house. And they're actually going to do a tour of it today. They're actually going to do a tour of it on Tolbert's show. So what's going to happen is you go to Bay Area Sports Collective. I think it's around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, might be noon, something like that. Sorry, I don't have the exact time in front of me, but go to Bay Area Sports Collective and the Tom Tolbert show, because he's going to have Woody on today, Kirk Reeder. And they're going to take a tour of that place, which apparently it is awesome. So anyway, make sure you tune in for Tommy for that, and follow along with me today for the Giants and the Reds, which starts at 12:45. Everybody have a wonderful Wednesday. I'll see you for the Thursday edition of the show, and we will be exactly 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!